close like that. Sangria nice in the back seat, please. Just do a roll it top down, but it's a fly on the street. In the twisted cap, going in my lacking in the twisted cap, and then the deer's back, the coaster cap, Tangerine on ice in the back CP. Do a roll it top down, ready to fly on the street.
Hey everybody, welcome to Open Mic with your host Mike Creed. That's me. I'm gonna have to apologize for the even worse, more worse, the worst, worser, worse audio than normal. I'm in a airport lounge. Getting this guy out at the last second because I've been a busy, busy boy. Tired. Can you feel it? Can you hear it in me, folks? Do you see, like, how exhausted I am? Before we get into the self-loathing, just going to say that Eric Wahlberg's on the podcast today, and I've known Eric a long time. I've known about him since I was 16. He's always been a bit of a legend in the cycling world for either his push-ups or his sit-ups regimen or anything like that. And I mean, I'm sure if I wasn't completely exhausted, I'd go on and on. But like, if you know much about the domestic racing circuit or the Canadian cycling circuit, then you know about Eric Wahlberg. Is the domestic and the domestic's not Canadian too, right? Domestic's just, it's not international, right? Right, folks? Back me up here. So, yeah. Headed up to Canada. Gonna do Tour Delta. Then on to Cascade, and then on to Tour Utah, and who knows, maybe another big race after that. Wink! Anyway, Eric Wahlberg. God, I feel like I'd be a fraud if I took this out, you know, but like I also want this to be a professional show here, so. Let me think about what to do. All right, I'm going to keep this in. All right, so podcast, like all podcasts in the world, sponsored by Carl Cyclist and Laser. Did you guys see that Laser just gave away a helmet yesterday? That's how easy it is. Like, I just am so slammed. We really don't have time to do a contest and figure out the winners and stuff. And Chris, he just waits for the good tweets to come in, and then he just picks one out. And he's like, hey, you have a helmet. And that's all it takes. I mean, even if you didn't, even if you weren't trying to win one, how could you not think like, wow, that's a really cool company? Fuck. Laser's great. So try get yourself a Laser helmet. Tell Chris how much you appreciate it. What else I got for you, folks? What else I got for you? I'm leaving this pausing. I got something. What do I got for you? All right. This is just like a question that's gonna have no payoff on my end. Like I wonder a lot. Like how much of your, like, this podcast is a little weird, right? That, like, I ask people, like, some fairly personal questions. I don't grill them, obviously, but you want them to open up, and you kind of hope that they open up, and then myself, I don't open up that much. So like sometimes I feel tempted to, and then you think like, oh no, that'd be bad. But like, what's the like most? That's what I'd be interested, like, in what people said when I just asked them like what the most difficult phone call they've ever had to make was. Like, what's that? Did you feel like better after it? Did you feel worse after it? Like, what's that supposed to be? That's a, like a really vague and leading question and open-ended. And this is a really dumb thing to say, but yeah. Sometimes you just feel like every single thing you say or that you have in your life, you're either denying it or you're embracing it. And I guess it's the trick is just figuring out what you're doing with it, huh? I'll figure it out one day. All right. I'm gonna go get on a plane. See you guys.
What have you done with the disc?
What are you looking at me for? I don't got it.
Maybe it's out of gas, eh?
Oh! You farted!
No, it wasn't me. It was the chair, eh?
He's lying!
No.
Check the machine, eh?
I'm not lying.
He's lying, all right.
I don't need no machine to tell me that, hey.
I didn't do it, I swear.
Oh, jeez, don't slice cheese in here, will you?
Take off.
I was walking down the street when out the corner of my eye I saw a pretty little thing approaching me. She said, I never seen a man who looks so all alone. Could you use a little company? If you pay the right price, your evening will be nice. And you can go and send me on my way. I said, you're such a sweet young thing. Why you do this to yourself? She looked at me and this is what she said. Oh, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world. I could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. Not even 15 minutes later, I'm still walking on the street when I saw the shadow of a man creep out of sight. And then he swept up from behind. He put a gun up to my head. He made it clear he wasn't looking for a fight. He said, give me all you got. I want your money, not your life. If you try to make a move, I won't think twice. I told him, you could have my cash, but first you know I gotta ask, what made you wanna live this kind of life? He said, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. I got bills to pay. I got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. No, I can't slow down. I can't hold back, though, you know. I wish I could. Oh, no, there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good. I was sitting in my house. The day was winding down and coming to an end. And so I turned to the TV and flipped it over to the news. And what I saw, I almost couldn't comprehend. I saw a preacher man in custody taking money from the church. He stuffed his bank account with righteous dollar bills. But even still, I can't say much because I know we're all the same. Oh, yes, we all still got to satisfy those thrills. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.
Yeah. But I mean, like, every team has their own different thing, right? Like, every director has their own style, I guess. Like, you're never sure because you see other directors doing other things and then you do other things. You're not
there's
not like a standard to do
list.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, buddy.
There's not the old standard. I mean, I guess at the basis, drive cars, register the riders for the races. I'll tell you this.
Kisla missed a meeting, right? Poor guy.
Dude. Give shit to Gord Frazier. Oh, he really laid
in. That was funny, actually.
That was really good, eh?
That was pretty good, actually.
He was, for those who don't know, there was, like, a caravan draw. And it's the only, like, competition that you don't really have any power over. You just have to sit there and be humiliated. I think, like, you stop caring after, like, car 7, huh? Like, after car 7 or 8, you're kind of like...
Pff. Well, I did one day in car 18 in Saginaw. It was funny. We had a yellow jersey.
Well, that's because you got your wrist slapped.
That was beautiful.
Oh, man, that was funny.
Yeah, hey, just keep my guy in the game, you know. And I actually, you know, Andy McCord, he's
a good guy.
He's a good combo out there. And he, you know, I don't think he really wanted to slap us with that, but, you know, he kind of had to do it. But it's like a saying in Canada, you have to screw the Canadians first and let the foreigners kind of run amok. And I think that was happening the last couple of days.
Really? Sure. That's an actual saying?
Yeah, that's what we do in this country, man. It keeps us down. That's what keeps us just one step behind.
You guys dive on your own grenades?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Well, not only that, I think we seem to lob grenades at each other sometimes, and that's got to change.
That's most countries, though, don't you think?
I don't know, buddy.
I'm just happy that you guys are finally having renegade shooters. Like, finally, like, that's...
Yeah,
I mean, I felt like you guys were really missing out on some good old-fashioned terror.
Yeah, we were way behind the eight ball on that one, but we're starting to make ground, you know? It's,
yeah.
It's scary.
How about this? There are these guys, these three prisoners, and one time they tried to escape by hijacking a helicopter, and then they get caught, and then the prison... doesn't think like they're like, oh well, they'll never try that again, and then 3 years later a helicopter drops out of the sky and picks these guys up.
God love them, they pulled it right off, you know. I mean,
fuck, it's amazing.
Yeah,
how do you not track
a helicopter?
Really
know it. I haven't followed that story close enough to see what prison it was, but you know,
it's not all that far from here. It was somewhere in Quebec, outside Quebec City.
Well, all the guards might have been eating poutine. They got the poutine hour, and, you know, once you start eating that stuff, you lose focus, man.
Yeah.
Shit like that can happen.
The poutine is too salty for me. I think we had this conversation today. Like, I think if it did American gravy, it'd be so much better.
Well, would it be poutine then, I guess?
It just, you know, Americans have to ruin everything, right?
Yeah, well, it's just like your Vermont maple syrup. It's not quite up to standards of Canadian stuff, so. You guys can make low-grade poutine, I guess. Maybe it worked down there, but
you straddle the fence, dude, because you like you live in the States mostly. You wear an NRA bell buckle.
I do.
I love it.
I love it.
You, yeah. How many? About, you don't have to say how many, but about how many homes are you partial owner in the States? How many are you up to?
That's
a handful.
A handful.
Yeah, a handful. Yeah. You're a slumlord.
A bit of a slumlord. Yeah.
So you've like. You made, like, a bit of your bones in the States, too. Like, do you come back to Canada often, or are you kind of...
I embrace America, but, you know, Canada's my home. I love coming back here. Miss my family a lot. I like being down in California. It's, don't get me wrong, it's beautiful down there, and I got a lot of good friends.
You're outside San Jose, yeah.
Yeah. The cycling community is great down there.
It's huge.
That's what, you know, that's... I wish that the scene in Canada would pick up enough that we could... you know, us, those of us that are passionate with the sport would have an opportunity to work with Canadian teams and be able to, you know, make a living. But I think it's starting to go up a little bit, you know, with that tour last week up there in Saguenay, they're bringing that back on. It's always small steps in the right direction, I think, so.
This is probably a little bit of a fallout after Spider Tech went away, huh?
Well, I mean, that, you know, that didn't hurt the cycling scene so much. What hurt was... we lost our national racing series, you know, that back in the mid-90s, which was the Canada Cup series. So I don't know if you ever, you probably never even did any of those.
No. Nope.
Yeah. That was great. It was coast to coast. Canadian Tire was the title sponsor. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah, it was really good racing. And even back in the day, like Coors Light and L.A. Sheriff, Saab, Subaru, Montgomery, all of the big American teams have come up for it. So it was very, very good.
How long did that go for?
That was probably, I'd say, mid to late 80s to 95 was the last year they had a Canada Cup season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been gone for a long time now.
When did you stop racing, dude?
Still haven't stopped, buddy.
Well, officially, like professionally, how about that? You still do a bit.
I'm still a hired gun, so I'm still professional.
You haven't stopped, eh?
People pay me to win races for you. That's what I do.
Such an asshole.
You know, I'm not the prom queen like you were.
Oh shit! Here we go.
But I put out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you think I didn't put out. Like, when was your, like, when would you say, like...
Well, no, my last official year was 2008 with Symmetrics, with Swain and those guys, so...
It's probably a good team to go out on, though, because, I mean, it was just such an amazing...
Oh, yeah, it was such a good group of guys, you know, and...
Probably felt like, once that went away, like, oh, there's nothing better than this, you have to kind of go...
Well, no, that's not how I felt at all.
No?
There was just no, I was still, I still, like, want to race, to be honest with you. You know, I love it, but, you know, this problem with the UCI rules and Division 3 teams or whatever, you know, you can't, it's bad for old athletes. If you're an old guy and your team folds or whatever, you know, your chances of getting on another team at anything over 27 can be a real barrier here in North America. And I think that's really sad, you know. Let's come down to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was also like before they had the... So that rule was before they made the rule that where Pro Tour teams needed a development team or, you know, they didn't need a card of that. So, like, they kind of have this redundancy rule where, yeah, if you're over 27 Division III, you definitely have a target on your back.
Yeah.
You have a couple bad years or even mediocre years. Yeah.
I think it's too bad because I think, you know, a lot of guys like yourself and myself, well, you know, towards the so-called twilight of our careers, I think we're still produce a good product. I think we're very marketable with the sponsors and such like that. And we could teach the young guys. And, you know, it's kind of funny nowadays, you know, with some of the coaching out there, you know, the guys can go uphill, they can time trial like crazy, but the tactics and sometimes they're just basically weapons of mass destruction. And they can be your own destruction, unfortunately, if you don't kind of keep the reins on them and show them what to do, you know.
Yeah, without trying to sound like the oldest guy in the world, I wonder if kids, no, fuck, that sounds old, younger riders, like they, you know, like wouldn't we, what, I don't know, I'll speak for myself, when I was coming up through cycling, like it was like this really weird eclectic sport that nobody else did, so you had to find that group, and then that group like told you all the secrets, and they told you how to, you know, they taught you all these things. You know, where to move up, how to move up, how to position yourself on the bike, all these things. Whereas, like, now you can just kind of, like, go buy a bike and watch on the internet, and there's not that, like, secret handshake anymore. Where I feel, so then you get these kids with, like, large VO2s just coming in, and yeah, and they can run gangbusters uphill or maybe in a great sprint, but
yeah,
I don't think there's
it's possible, you know. I think, but, you know, I did. The reason for keeping older guys involved hands-on is like, you know, you don't need to keep on reinventing the wheel or keep on making mistakes everyone makes. You need someone to teach you, you know, that...
You can't really teach them from the car, eh?
Yeah. I don't know who taught you, Creed, but I'd like to meet that guy because...
I think you're talking to him.
I remember when I first met you and Pate, it was down in Park, Arizona, another dam race, and,
you guys were
out of control down there. I remember you having nudie centerfolds taped to the windows of the van, and I think Jim Golkin was running it back then. And
can you imagine?
The poor guy, he was just losing his hair every day. And I look at you, and I look at you now, and there's no change. That's so interesting. You're just as haywire now as you were back then, Creed. But I love you, man.
Oh,
you
know? Thanks. Thanks. Yeah. No, I think. I'm self-taught, and unfortunately...
Yeah, self-taught.
Unfortunately, I had an asshole for a teacher.
That's scary, man. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean... But that was, like... unfortunately, I was talented enough to kind of make people remember how much of an asshole I was as a kid. Whereas, you know, like, when normally when you're a kid, you kind of just, like, fucking off in your town.
And yeah.
Before you get into, like, the professional field, you've maybe been humbled a few times. Well, whereas I just kind of, like, found this weird hole in the system where I kind of came and just banged through. And then I didn't want to race with juniors, so, like, I would, you know, you come guys, in and race you with guys, you guys.
You guys were a terror, man. But I always liked you and Pete right from the get-go. So it was, yeah. That was quite a pair back then, and, you know.
Pete and I always liked you because you were always, like we were such time trial geeks, and then you were winning all the time trials, replacing really well.
I was never a geek, though, buddy.
Oh, really? A geek,
no.
Oh.
Not a time trial geek. I could do it, but
I mean, but you were like, you were like
a time trial specialist. In a time trial, you just don't have the whole field chasing your ass around. That's the difference, you know. Like, I won more than my fair share of criterion in road races solo or from a small break. And that was just because I was time trialing. So.
Yeah. How many Canadian national TTs did you win?
I had a good run. I had eight consecutive ones.
Are you still up on Dwainer, or?
Yeah, I'm up on Dwainer because Hechtel broke his streak, so Dwainer's got a bit of a...
He's got to start all over.
Yeah, he might get more outright, but I don't think he's going to have eight in a row anymore, so I might have that one.
I got to talk to him, just to fight.
Yeah,
just keep him going.
You got to keep him going, for sure.
I think he's pretty tired.
Yeah.
He's been having a good run.
I'm just wondering, I just want to get this over quick, because I want to start talking with Zach. When's Zach coming in?
The Bell.
No?
No. I mean, hopefully for Canadian Nationals.
No, I'm... Erker said when he set this up, he charged me an extra $100. And I was supposed to be doing Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis tonight. So I just want to get this over with quick and get down to business.
Erker?
No, this is
on the arm, man. I can't pay you anything.
I've been fooled again.
Fucking Creed strikes again.
That's all right.
So besides a little bit faster, how is the old Optum without me? Same culture, eh? Same guys.
I'm really happy with the group in general. You know, I think it's a great staff, it's great riders, and it's a lot of fun to be involved with this group here. You know.
Yeah.
And I think the organization has been a staple of North American cycling for a good while now, and I think a lot of people, look up to our program, and we don't always win for sure, but we always try hard, like every other team out there. So sure. I'm proud to be part of it. You know.
Yeah. Do you think like next year they're with they might have like a little bit of turnover with Kando and whatever? Like, do you kind of feel? It's almost like. I mean, the soul of the team will always be there, but, like, if Kando goes out, if Friedman goes out, Friedman's been talking about going out, like, it definitely leaves, like, a personality gap, I guess that would be a term for it.
Well, those guys are definitely, especially Friedman, he's such a cool cat. I mean, he has a lot of that character with him, you know, and Kando's been, Kando's got the longest running history of the group, I guess, him and Jonas, really, so, yeah, I mean, if Kando is going to go, so that's going to, he'll be missed for sure, but, I think he'll always have his finger in the pot there when we get there.
Have you started scouting in your brain, like, oh, this guy would fit in, that guy would fit in? Do you kind of do that already, or do you just kind of,
well, we got a lot early? of offers out to this kind of new team that's just started this year, so there's been a lot of interest in our team from, I think it's called Smart Stuff or something like that.
Guys,
a lot of the riders want to come over because they want to move up to a better program and they want to work with a better director. So,
really,
yeah.
Who's that?
That's me,
Jonas.
Oh, you're such a little bitch, Creed, all the time. You know,
you fucking
you can't
started.
Throw me a flower.
You started.
We share the same birthday, and you keep on forgetting that, man.
I do forget that.
Yeah.
You, me,
Elvis.
Bowie, Elvis.
Bowie too? Not
Bowie. Dude, Bowie.
I'm not a Bowie fan, but I'm listening to a lot of Elvis now. That's the only way I can relax is
I don't even know how to continue with this fucking.
I listen to Elvis and I eat shot blocks. That's my relaxation for the day.
How can you not like the thin white Duke?
Yeah, I'm never sure what side of the fence that guy walked on. That's the thing that scares me a bit about this.
Yeah, he brought in androgyny. It was a thing he did. It was pretty fucking sweet.
Yeah, well, you know, where I came from, Jesus didn't really assume that stuff.
So. You don't like it when the guys put on a lot of makeup and, like, really, like, gave themselves bouffant hairdos?
Well, you talk about the problem with the mass murders and stuff out there. It's the guys wearing the makeup, you know? The Columbine kids all dressed in black with the nail polish on and stuff like that. Like, that's an alarm sign. Like, you might as well just wrap them up in caution tape and, because that guy's going to be a problem. That's all there is to that.
Yeah, but then the very same people who, like, say, like, oh, okay, we should have seen the warning signs and we want the government to do something, a lot of the times are the same people who want small government and want the government off our backs and think the government's coming after us.
Yeah.
You don't get it both ways. It's either hands off or hands on.
Yeah, it's just like that Rage Against the Machine song.
Which one? Like, every single
killing
one.
Killing Him Softly, or what is it?
Killing Him Softly?
You know the one I'm talking about. It's a classic.
Killing in the Name Of.
Killing in the Name Of. There you go. Yeah, Killing in the Name Of.
Yeah, well, I think we're both probably speaking out our asses on it, but I just think if you want to go glass half full on it, if you want to think about how many people in the world there are, and how many of them don't commit fucking mass murder, it's pretty safe world.
Yeah, I'd say from a percentage wise,
you're probably pretty safe.
You're probably gonna be okay.
Yeah, you're probably gonna fuck yourself up. The chance of somebody else fucking you up is.
Yeah, I don't know. It just it's upsetting. It's upsetting for me. You know, like the whole 9/11 thing. That was really a life changing day for me.
Sure.
And then this stuff going on today.
Wait, what year?
September 11th.
Yeah, but which one? Because 2008 was great.
2008.
You know, it was a bad joke.
It is a bad joke. Yeah.
Okay, so.
I'm talking about life-changing events, Creed. That's what I'm talking about right now. That was
I tried to add a little bit of levity. That was my fault.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was dumb. But I'm saying stuff like that is, I lost faith in a lot of things in that day, humanity in general for that to happen. And then when you get these mass shootings and stuff like nowadays, or just these guys going crazy and shooting up school kids or blowing away cops and stuff like that, like it's, I don't understand it, brother.
Well,
bike racing. We gotta do more bike racing, and you know what? Tree planting.
On tree planting?
Yeah. If you send people out planting trees, I did that. That's a miserable job. So that should be the penalty of doing any crime. No jail time. You just start
planting trees. Doesn't sound that bad.
Oh, it's nasty, man.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like full-grown trees?
No, I'm talking reforestation.
Oh, yeah. No, that would...
There.
That's probably pretty...
In the rain and the bugs and...
No, that would probably be pretty good.
It's hardcore, yeah.
Fuck. I was thinking about the...
Real-life situation there. Sorry to throw you off there.
No, it's not that at all. It's with the... mass shooting thing. This is what gets me about Olberg, is that, like, so it happens and it's horrible and everybody can agree on that, and then you both sides whether you're pro-gun, anti-gun, whatever, like, they use these deaths for some form of propaganda.
Yeah.
And then the second a Lindsay Lohan story comes out, we forget about it, and we have the same conversation over and over again. And that's why I get really, like, tuned out to everything, because it's, like, it's so disingenuous.
Yeah.
Like, there's not... The debate is, like, two TVs talking at each other.
Yeah.
It's...
I agree on that, but I freaking love TMZ, that's all I love.
My idea, though.
I'm the biggest TMZ fan, so I Britney Spears.
I can't believe that's true. You don't.
I'm right up on all that stuff, man. Bieber's been in there too. He's doing a hell of a job.
My idea of Wahlberg is, because I don't really care about guns either way. I don't own a gun. I don't think other people should stop owning guns. I don't know if we need assault rifles or whatever. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I have no dog in the fight. I just get annoyed in the constant debate. So my idea is for the people who want gun control is, why don't we just tell the NRA, okay, you tell us the solution, right? Like, we're going to give you full control for, like, a year or two. You tell us what you want. And then if that doesn't stop it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because as long as we both have this loggerhead and nothing's done, if we have to bring back, like, full benefits for people, like, if we have to make healthcare, mental health care, like, completely free. You just say you feel off and you walk in and you're completely taken care of. If that's a solution. If, like, you know what I mean? But, like, as long as we just have this conversation, like, shit like this will always happen.
That sounds like you're supporting the Canadian healthcare system, buddy, right there. You know?
I guess. I mean, why not? Like, is it really a big deal if you have to fucking pay extra so people don't, like, go crazy? Is that, like, a fucking horrible thing?
I hear you, buddy.
I mean,
I'm in favor. I'm not a gun guy. I don't like killing things. I love things to death. I don't kill things, you know?
Yeah?
But,
so is the NRA buckle kind of, like, ironic in a way, or?
Well, you could, you might look at it that way. I think it's, people that see it, I think it, they wonder a little bit about it. And I'm like you, Creed. I like
fucking with them.
I like to put that seed of doubt who is this guy? You know?
Yeah.
You see that? The best thing is when, you know, when I'm doing some of these projects in Fresno, they see the belt buckle and then they see the shaved legs and
you're really fit.
They see my old station wagon and they see a dashboard Jesus, so it really creates a very confusing picture for most people, I guess, but I kind of like that stuff.
I have a question. There's these Wahlberg legends. So when I was coming up racing, there were these Wahlberg legends because, you know, that's all you had back then. Like, you didn't have, like, Twitter accounts. You didn't have Facebook. Right now, if somebody wants to, a younger rider wants to look me up, he just looks at my Twitter account and he probably has a pretty good idea of who I am. But when I was coming up, I hear about Wahlberg legends. I can't search you out. I just have to hear these legends.
That was the beauty of it back in the day.
Yeah.
You could just make shit up.
And, yeah.
And people could not research it to prove you wrong.
Right. So you had
to... You could ask around if enough people believed your story. It was legit. So that's the beauty. I just want to go back to those good old days.
Yeah.
You know,
a little bit of mystery.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like when a partnership was a business relation or man and woman, and you used your battery to start your car and not to drive it, like back to the simpler times, you know? That's what I just wish for Creed, really.
Yeah, all right. You're such a troll. You're just fucking with people. You don't mean any of this. Wahlberg legend number one. 100 push-ups, 500 sit-ups every day before bed. True, not true?
True.
How, to now, this day?
I'm stepping it up.
To this day?
Yeah, I've had to, you probably didn't hear, but I'm coming off a bit of an injury right now. So I took a digger a couple weeks ago and jacked up my shoulder pretty good. And
riding?
Yeah, rung my bell real good too. So So I've had to back off and I'm working right back up to it. But
So it was 500 sit-ups, 200 push-ups.
Now I'm up to 1,000. Upper body stuff twice a day, once in the morning, once at night.
What is
I'm
that?
I'm up to 1,000 reps of abdominal stuff, and I'm up to 500 push-ups.
Fuck, Homer. Is it just like how you start your day? Just how you start your day? Like, you do it first thing?
Do it first thing. I wake up, and I play my brother's song from the Blazing Elwood, Save It for Later. Covered it for me, old English beat tune. That's how I start my day, and I just get into my upper body friggin' mode, and I just go...
Where did that come from? Where did that come from? Like, when did you start doing that?
Doing that forever.
Like, since you were in high school? Since you were in junior high?
Since I started riding, I've been doing it. Because I always hated when I got that ball of fire in the small of my back, you know, when you're doing a crit, jumping out of corners or steep little punchy climbs all the time. So I figured if I did enough abdominal work and core strength, at least I would, you know, cross that problem.
Eliminate a variable.
But my legs would still be sore no matter what, but at least my back wouldn't be sore at the same time. So
sure.
That's just how simple I am, Creed. That's how simple I see things.
And just... Have you gone, like, 2 or 3 days without and you felt like trash? Or you just...
Yeah. Yeah, I feel horrible. And I get angry and it's just no good.
It is... The hardest thing is when you realize that... I mean, because we have been doing it so long, like, you are addicted to exercise.
This has been a little tough this year. I started working a little extra. I got involved with the Stanford cycling team a little bit, so that's kind of added a bit more time on the road, a bit even you know, less time to ride over the season. So that's I'm not happy about that kind of fitness loss, but I know in the autumn I'll be able to hit it again pretty hard, and that's what I love to do. So I'll get through the summer, then I'll.
Is your family the same, or are you kind of like the odd one out here? Like, is your family just totally athletically minded?
My sister was very athletic, but my brother's a musician, so. My mom and dad were both farmers, so, you know.
So hardworking.
Yeah, just that hard work ethic was kind of passed down, I guess.
Did you work on the farm when you were a kid?
No. My dad came to Ontario and he was a geologist, so he worked in the mines. Yeah. That wasn't too bad, though.
No?
Yeah. That was a staff.
So by the time you came around, they were out of the farm, they were...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they grew up in the farms, yeah. I was born in Ontario, so...
But at least they had, like, the work ethic then, right?
Oh, yeah, and sometimes that kills me, too. I think it's just your work. You know, I got to learn to work smarter, not harder sometimes, but...
So, like, along those lines, not to, again, sound like the oldest people in the world, but, like, when it is... When you... I remember a Wahlbergism. I wrote you an email once saying... You know, like, there's Nature Valley TT coming up. It's a road bike TT. Like, this Wahlberg, he was pretty damn handy at time trials, and I've been slipping up a little bit in the time trials. Maybe he has some, like, new tricks, some new training methods to kind of get a new stimulus for me. And I wrote an email, and I just got back, like, lots of motor pacing, buddy, and that was it.
Yeah.
It was so funny, because it was like, again, to go back to, like, not sound like the oldest person in the world, like, I feel like now with the power meters and the everything and everybody has a coach, like, everybody's so afraid of, like, going over the edge that maybe I don't know if we get all that close to it anymore.
I'm still motor pacing guys right now.
Yeah.
Freaking love it.
I know, I motor pace the shit out of my guys.
It's the best tool. Yeah, it's the best tool. You know, I think with the power stuff, I think it's been good. I think it's acted as a carrot for a lot of guys out there that maybe don't have the...
They can chase numbers, yeah.
Yeah, they don't have the determination or the ability to push themselves that hard. Like when you and I perhaps are riding, like I didn't really measure anything. I didn't really do a whole lot of structured intervals per se, but I'll tell you, I did some awfully hard riding. And I was maxed, you know, but I didn't need...
But you became really in tune with your body when you're able to push it. That, like, when you don't have numbers to look at, the only thing you have is that constant biofeedback.
That's right.
Yeah, you become you really...
You go by feel, that's right, yeah.
And you knew when you had to, like, when you learned all your... I feel like you learned your body inside and out. Whereas, like, the last 4 or 5 years of my career, I was so... Just so much just staring at the power meter.
Yeah.
That I kind of lost track of when I felt good and when I didn't. I would just look at the numbers, and if the numbers were high, I would think, oh, well, I must feel good.
Yeah.
Which maybe is not necessarily true.
Maybe that, or maybe your calibration slipped or something. Yeah, right. That's the worst thing. But I agree with you 100%. I mean, I think it can be a good training tool, and I think it has made time trialing a bit more scientific.
Yeah.
Compared to the days, you know, before that when you and I would just go... I basically go as hard as I could. That was it. I knew I could go wide open for 1 hour, no matter what. And I'd probably start off way too fast, and I'd probably really, really start to drop off in the last 10 minutes. But for whatever reason, maybe, you know, I built a big enough cushion before I really started to blow that no one would catch me.
I don't know,
you know. It would be interesting to see what that data might have been. But I still wouldn't change anywhere, any way how I did it. It's just way to go. And I see nowadays, you know, guys, they see their numbers aren't good,
and they just
shut her down. You know, and you can't shut it down. You gotta dig through those hard patches. You gotta keep on pushing, keep on chasing, and you gotta hang on to that wheel no matter what the numbers say.
Yeah.
And you know, try to win the race. It doesn't matter what the data says at that point in time. So, and it's unfair to chalk that up to say everyone does that. I think there are the guys that are still really successful, you know, have that ability to push through and ignore some of that data and just sack up and get it done. But
yeah, you really need to. Like, there's, yeah. I wish I didn't have like a power. Like, looking back on it, if I could change it, I'd say like the last 5 years of my career, I wouldn't use a power meter half as much as I did.
Yeah.
Just to kind of, so I could, just get a better understanding. Or I just pay more attention to my body instead of paying attention to the numbers.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good training tool, but I don't think you should let it really dictate your whole day or your whole
race, and I would,
per se.
I would. I mean, I would turn around early.
Yeah. I think that's a mistake. You know, and I really encourage, I still like to see people doing group rides, because a lot of the coaching is so individual, so specific, that a lot of people, they don't seem to do any more hard group rides, and they don't, as they're coming up through the ranks, they don't have a chance to sharpen those skills.
Yeah.
They have to do that in the race, but, you know, in the race, that's not the time to learn. The time to learn is in your own group ride environment back home. Then you learn to follow wheels read some tactics. You can also see how your local competitors are doing too, and you can gauge your fitness off them, you know. So
yeah.
I'm all for that.
Sounds like you have some really good group rides, huh?
Oh yeah, the community is really good there in the Bay Area. Yeah.
It's massive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good setup. California's expensive to live in, that's the drawback. But everything else, I mean, it's got everything there.
Yeah.
How
many Olympics did you go to, buddy?
Yeah, three, brother.
Three?
Yeah.
What, like, is that the, is that, like, your best memories, like, some of those, or are they frustrating memories, or are they?
You know, it was,
I mean, I guess by the third one, it becomes a little bit of a routine, but.
Well, no, it's the Olympics. I mean, it's such an honor to be part of an Olympic team, you know, and Olympic will add a little bit of credibility to your name right off the bat, so it's kind of nice to have that attachment, but.
Yeah.
You know, it was always a challenge for sure, you know, but I think the way guys are getting stricken from the records now, I'm going to be a medalist pretty soon. It's looking good, man.
Do you keep bugging them?
I just got to wait another 10 more years, and they're going to be giving me a medal. That's what I'm looking at.
Fuck, that's funny. So you did, like, Atlanta?
Yeah, Atlanta, Sydney, and Athens.
What was your best ride?
I had a really good ride in the road race in Sydney, actually, and it ended up leading out Gord at the end of the race, and I think Gord was like 15th or 16th, which is,
yeah,
you know, on paper, it doesn't really sound that good, but when you look,
if you know bike racing,
yeah, if you know bike racing, that's a good result. And I was I think 16th and 18th in the time trials in Sydney and Athens. In Atlanta was pretty crazy because you know, the time trial ran over probably 3 or 4 hours because they ran us in a bunch of flights, and of course you had those massive convection thunder showers that were happening in the afternoon there. So I did mine in an absolute deluge. It was incredible, the difference in conditions. So so that was good. But Sydney, I had a pretty good ride, and Athens, I definitely had a good ride. So
have you like ever for, I mean, I don't spend a lot of time on it, but do you ever for like shits and giggles like go back to like, okay, I got 16th there. And then, like, gone through the record books and, like, seen who's no longer allowed in cycling.
Well, I haven't done it, but every now and then, almost every day, it's looking better for me, really. Unfortunately.
Yeah, it doesn't make it the same. It doesn't make it a shame that they have, like, a statute of limitations on it. I guess they don't want to, like, ship the medal around too much. I mean, postage fees get expensive.
I guess so. Some guys have them squirreled away. I don't agree.
Do you really think they send medals back? I always hear that they send medals.
Apparently they do. I don't know. I think there's a couple more that should be going back. That's for sure.
Yeah. What was some of the time trials you won in the States? You won a few.
The best one I won was I won your U.S. Olympic trials.
Was that the in Mississippi?
In Jackson. Yeah.
Fuck, I think I remember.
I won
that.
It by over a minute.
Did you go to the Olympics for us?
No, but they disqualified me after I was finished. It was beautiful.
Oh, I remember
that,
this.
Well,
I
was that was a scarring experience for sure, you know. So, but that was.
Was because what was the disqualification?
It was the air gap on my. On my little Cervelo time trial bike.
It was because you couldn't fit a fucking credit card.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem is, like, the gap was wide enough. You could stick a fork through it, or a knife, per se. But because it was a 650C wheel, the curvature was so sharp on the wheel, the top and bottom of the credit card were that's what was binding between the frame and the wheel. So it wasn't the actual straight air gap on it. So... Mm-hmm. They just came up with that rule, so they, you know, and
like,
the 650
like
just got, oh, it was like a week or two before that. It was a brand new rule. And I...
Did you know about the rule?
Yeah, I didn't even know about it. But the thing was, I had to go ahead to do the time trial. Like my bike passed the initial inspection, and I was given...
Did somebody protest?
Yeah, I did.
No, did somebody protest you winning?
No.
Official just took a glance at it.
They just measured the bike, and they say, hey, this thing's illegal. And it's not like I stopped and adjusted the wheel halfway out there. I mean, a minute margin. That's not like an extra couple mil airframe air gap between your rear wheel and the cutout. That's, you know,
right.
It was crazy. You know, I would have pulled that thing back. So you could have played football in that gap and still would have done okay. So
you won that.
So that was one of my biggest wins and you know, it was yanked from the record books, but it's still on my resume.
But you won. Do you win both? You won both. But before we get to both, you won. Did you ever win like the Redlands or Sea Otter time trials?
I had some real good TTs in Sea Otter. One year, Zabriskie just nipped me, so I had a really good ride in that.
Yeah.
And I had some good ones on that Fontana Speedway down there in Redlands.
Yeah.
But you know, I've had some good ones, brother.
What was your? Yeah. Like some of your favorite teams come on. So you went like Shackley.
Yeah,
you went Shackley to Symmetrics.
Started off on Magic Cuts actually, which was a real good team in Canada.
What was Magic Cuts? Yeah. Tell me, it's a haircut place.
Yeah, haircut place. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was great, man.
Did you guys get free haircuts?
Yeah, it was great, man. it was a really good setup. A good friend of mine, David Spears, got me onto that team, and it was us and Evie Miko back in the day going head-to-head, so the two best teams in Canada. And we did all these races like Bovis and Lexi John and all the Canada Cup stuff as very, very fierce rivals, but it was a great way to come into the sport. You know? And then after that, I was with Seldane for a while, which is out of Montreal. Then it was with Saturn Canada back in the day, which was out of Toronto. It was run by Michael Berry's parents, so we had a pretty good crew on that. And then it was 96 when I first came down to the States and surveys from Shackley. They're looking for guys with Olympians that had Olympic potential.
Sure.
And I was solidly in the running for the Canadian Olympic team. So
does Shackley still exist?
Yeah, I think they're still out there. Yeah.
There's something weird, like basically reseller of nutrition product or something.
Well, they had their own dedicated vitamin lineup, and it was big. I mean, they had, you know, it wasn't quite like Amway. You couldn't buy car tires and toasters and stuff, but you could get any kind of health product really, from shampoos to vitamins.
I just remember it seemed a little like Ponzi schemey. Like it came in and like, because there's some lady in town growing up who sold Shackley stuff, and then she'd give you like something for free, and then she would say like, oh, but you can become a distributor too if you just buy $1,000 worth of stuff, and then you make $5,000, something.
Well, it's like when the fish is just nibbling at the hook, you gotta wait and try to set it hard somehow. So that's what they do. But you're right, it was
a little weird.
Multi-level marketing, you call that.
Multi-level marketing,
that's the name for that. Yes,
nice.
Yeah. But, we met a lot of great people with that, too.
Yeah.
The Shackley distributors, a lot of times they would host us in their homes. And, and it was a good setup. But it was a bit of an effort, too, because quite often you'd be in the middle of a stage race, and you might not be getting a massage, but you'd be going doing a sports nutrition presentation at a potluck dinner, and then start racing next morning. But that's part of what you had to do. So you just
it's where the sport is at sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I'm always I appreciate the money the sponsors put in, and I'm more than happy to do that kind of stuff and explain the course of that stuff to our riders. And our guys are very personable and they have no problems with it either. So, it's good.
It is weird to think, like, they are sponsoring us. Like, what are we actually giving them back besides the privilege of having their name on us? You know, like, it's uncomfortable when there are those hard deliverables like that where you say, like, you have to do them.
Yeah, you need to. I think it's even more so important nowadays with everyone really scrutinizing how much money they're putting into a team and what kind of return they're getting up, you know, off of it. And even if it's just that feel good return, I think if you're part of a team, you have to, you know, if that's what the sponsor's trying to sell back to his board or whatever, you gotta, you know, really service them as much as you can. And we have a very high level of interaction with our sponsors on site, our car's always full, so that's good, and I think that's a good little perk, and it's a little bit of extra work on our part, but it's fine.
Yeah.
For
another Wahlberg legend I have was that your ability and readiness to drill out and par away, like, equipment, your derailleur cages.
Well,
right.
Reed, I mean, if you can't make it faster, you can make it lighter. That's just how I look at it. Just like when I grew up drag racing my dad's old 1973 Galaxy.
That's probably where you got it, right?
Yeah. First thing you did was you pulled the back seat out of it. You took the jack and spare tire out of the trunk. You saved about 150 pounds right there.
Yeah. So it came early.
It came early, man. I come across that.
Did it ever backfire? Did something ever break?
Well, when you flat the tire, you don't have it, and you forgot to put the spare back.
I mean, in cycling.
No, in cycling.
It never came back to bite you?
That shit's all over-engineered. You can drill the crap out of it.
I do remember being really impressed. I saw your bike, and it had those titanium Cane Creek brakes.
Cane Creek 200 SL. I'm still running them on my old Norco.
Those things don't stop, man.
They're wonderful brakes.
They are not wonderful brakes.
Well, they're not brakes. It's called a speed modulator. It's not called a brake. It's a modulator.
Okay.
So, and it's also incentive to not get heavy, because if I got over 145 pounds, there's no way I stop. So.
It becomes harder to modulate your speed with those things over 145 pounds.
Yeah, you got to stay about 141, 142.
How far
that's incentive.
How far off your race weight are you? You don't look like all over your race weight at all.
No, I haven't stepped on a scale for a long time.
Yeah.
As long as my high
school... Same clothes.
As long as my high school jeans still fit Creed, I'm happy.
Yeah, right. We got Wahlberg legends. So, I can't believe that it never came back to bite you, though. The equipment stuff. That's so funny. Because I was an equipment geek, too. But
yeah.
I never went as far
to
draw.
I think the worst thing was, I got to know a good friend of mine, Jim O'Brien. He's a Mexican, not a Mexican. And he just makes stuff fit that's not supposed to fit. That's all there's to it. So I've done that all my life. But to actually find someone that would buy into that crazy scheme of mine, Jim. And Jim was, he didn't know, and he probably doesn't like to admit it, but he would pour a bit of fuel on the fire, because he would just encourage me to look at my Forrest Gump engineering and actually think it was okay. And then when I went from Saturn from Shackley to Saturn, like, that shit would not fly with the Saturn mechanics.
Right.
I was their worst nightmare.
Saturn is very professional.
Very professional. And I understand the potential liability issues you might have, or they felt if something failed. But I just made sure anything I might have modified back in the day, like wheels or whatever, I'd put a little skull and crossbones on it just so they'd know that I had touched it and no one else should use it.
You would personally mark it?
Would mark it, yeah.
This is the Wahlberg special.
Yeah, I'd say this one's been...
How was it going from Shackley, which is a team of, like, you know, you guys are on big salaries. You guys are, you know, probably much in the same way as Smart Stop is right now. You know, just one van, one car, loading up, just basically pirate ship. And then you go to, like, a really professional setup like Saturn. Was it relieving or was it constraining or?
It was a good step for me. I really enjoyed Shackley was a lot of fun, but we were a little on the dysfunctional side for sure. But Frank Socha kept the whole ship sailing there, and I was on there with Jonas, you know, for the love of God, and we're still together now. So we've made
I didn't
a
know
lot
Jonas
of good.
Was on Saturn.
Oh yeah, no Shackley.
Shackley, right?
Yeah. Shackley. So that even though it was a little trying sometimes for sure, you know, it was still a very good program. But Saturn was very, very well run, you know. But
how long were you on there for?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
Until
but
it.
It didn't matter what team I was on. I was never really making huge cash no matter what creed. So.
No, yeah, but Saturn paid at least.
They paid okay.
They paid all right.
I was making huge cash though. Yeah.
You guys had a good team. You won a lot. You
yeah.
Was battling Mercury.
Yeah.
Was it? Like,
yeah, it was crazy back in those days. I mean, I think about you know Mercury and Navigators and who else? I mean, there's some big programs.
Sometimes Prime Alliance.
Yeah. Prime Alliance, you guys had.
Sometimes we were on the outskirts, you guys.
Yeah, but you guys had a pretty strong team back in the day too. You know,
there was like, I do remember like it being like the, because you know sometimes Postal would show up to Redlands or whatever, and it'd be like Saturn, and then sometimes Shackley, and then Mercury and Postal, Navigators.
I remember Core States and up here actually both when ZVBZ would come over the checks and.
Yeah.
The Polish Emroz guys and that
are
was,
we just
that
like
was,
romanticizing
that
it or was it just
bike,
like
that was fast bike racing, man, I'll tell you. It's,
yeah,
it
I wonder about it. Like I wonder if we romanticize it like cuz we just seem like we were so geared up and so we just wanted to race. And like is it still the same or is it or was it faster then? Or is it just because now we're kind of distant from it and it's old hat, we don't care as much? Like, it doesn't seem
I think it's faster today.
You think so?
I mean, I think they're going faster today. I don't know if it's better. I don't know what it is. It's, I mean...
Do you think...
Better wheels, equipment, I don't know. But I think it's... I've seen it slow today, too. But I've seen it pretty fast sometimes. Today,
yeah.
You
know? I just wonder why in my brain I have it... Is like those days seem like so. Like everybody was strong and everybody was tough and everybody was a badass and like I'm sure it wasn't like I'm sure there were guys dragging ass and doing half the work,
man,
but
they
seem like tough bastards back then.
I remember a lot of tough bastards back then. Yeah, that whole Kiwi and Aussie.
Is it because they were just older than us and like we naturally don't look at younger people as tougher than us, like? Is that something?
I don't know, Creed. I've been the oldest guy the whole time, so, I mean, who have I had to look up to?
Come on, Wilbur, you're not a day over 32, are you?
Always been the oldest guy, buddy.
So, this will go up on Thursday. So, we'll be racing up Mount Megantic by the time this goes up.
Nice.
What do you think? I mean, obviously, you've got to tip your hat a little bit to Carter Jones, but Jameis doesn't have Cook. They don't have Brennis. They don't have Armorillo. How do you see this race going?
I mean, I like our chances with Carter for sure. And I.
But you only got five guys. That's kind of like, is that a little worrying?
Yeah, it's a little worrying right now. You know,
yeah.
I think we had a really good week coming into here, but
yeah.
I think our guys will admit. I'll admit we're kind of stealing from Peter to pay Paul in a couple of those days, and you know, at the end, it was close. The guys fought hard, but it didn't.
Yeah.
We didn't quite have the, you know, the manpower to close it down. And I think we, you know, we don't have our best climbing team here for this for this event here.
We're running double schedule.
Both, so yeah, we have a very heavy roster back in Nature Valley right now, but you know, Carter's site, I picked him up this morning, and he pretty much rode all the way from the Quebec airport down here to boast as a bit of an opener.
Yeah.
An easy 100K opener, so...
Sure.
He's
ready to go.
He's chomping at the bit, ready to go, you know. And then I look at Britton on your team. I like Rob's chances. I mean, he's been riding good. He's a strong time trialer, so I think you guys got a...
There's four seconds between him at Hilo.
Yeah. I think it's gonna be a good little battle.
Yeah, it's still hard though. It's really weird watching the Optum team. It's still so weird for me. It's like it's still in me, you know. Like if I'm not completely paying attention when they call for Optum over race radio, I still flinch sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still do the little flinch.
Well, that's why I make sure I flash you the bird every time I jump out of the car, just to get you back to reality.
I'm gradually hating you guys more. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, fuck these guys.
Well, I mean, you left the fucking nest.
So. I left before I was kicked out.
You left.
I was working on getting kicked out.
You left the comfort tree or whatever you want to call it and decided to spread your wings and fly away on your own. So, whatever, you know.
I saw that I was about to get out. I felt, I don't know.
That I think the good thing about this, you know, you and I have both been in the sport for a long time, and I think we're still here. It's not for financial reasons, as there's no question about that. But you know, I think you know, we have a big passion for the sport. We love our guys, and I like being here. You know, at the manager's meeting tonight, sitting back and making fun of Gord, and then you know, he's taking a run at us, and it's, you know, it's pretty fun actually. You know,
yeah. I like it. What do you love? What do you think you love most about the sport? What kept you in it for so long?
And I just like to ride my bike. It's that simple. I think it's a great activity, and I always like to feel the speed. And I can, from racing for so long myself, I can appreciate the challenge and the highs and the lows. You know, my guys are going through, and your guys go through, and we share those highs and lows with them on every day, pretty much over anything. So, you know, I enjoy that. You know.
Yeah. You obviously do miss racing, really.
Yeah. Oh, I miss it.
Yeah, you kind of say that.
I still like to, I like to pin up every now and then when I get back and get enough riding and in me to actually be competitive. I'm not just going to start just to say I can get the t-shirt to say I finished it. I still want to be competitive out there. So
yeah.
These little extended road trips are tough from that regard, but, you know, I go home and, you know, a good day for me is just to be able to get out and ride my bike along the ocean. Friends and stuff. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm trying to come back to that. Like, I had the realization today for the first time that I miss riding my bike. I haven't missed riding my bike in years.
Yeah.
It was such a duty.
I could see that.
And like,
I could see that, how you were.
Yeah.
I've never felt like that. I hope I never will. Maybe I will sometime. And if I do, then that's a day to maybe try something else. I don't know, but I still love it.
I think whatever you do, Wolberg, you're probably going to obsess over and kick its ass.
Well, I'm not OCD.
You're not, but you like to win. You're competitive.
I'm a competitor.
Yeah.
I like to challenge myself.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate about you. It makes me feel bad that you're going to lose this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know how badly you want it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a race you've won. You've won this race.
Yeah, have you won this race? I was looking through the list, sir, and I didn't see your name. They had that whole record right back in the 80s.
What year was that that you won?
I think it was, I believe they called it the toughest edition of Bose.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it's gone down in the legendary annals of Canadian cycling.
Yeah. What year?
It was 95. That was 95. A really, really tough edition of La Bose.
La Bose?
Yeah.
Oh, 95. Okay. No, I mean, I was 14, but. I mean, you were. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you had like three international riders.
Yeah, yeah.
Field of 60.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was really tough.
Yeah. Back then. I know you're gonna try to shade on my performance, but you know, I didn't expect any difference, buddy. So.
You know, I had this moment with you, and you didn't realize it. It's like, cause growing up, always looked up. Like, there's Eric Wolberg, this guy who does a million sit-ups, push-ups. He loves time trialing. I love time trialing. Tough motherfucker. Had a lot of respect. We never really ever talked, but I, you know, always, I felt like I always treated you with respect because I liked you more than what Pate and I would treat other people with. I don't think Pate went out of our way to like fuck with you. How about that?
Yeah, that's still not setting the bar very high, but fair.
And I remember a Gila one year, and we did that climb, the Gila. It's not the Gila Monster, is it the Gila?
In the last stage.
No, the first stage.
Oh, that Mogollon.
Mogollon.
Yeah, Mogollon. That's it, yeah.
And it got down to like five of us, and you were there. And then I saw you getting dropped. I was on your wheel. I saw you getting dropped, and I came around. And I'm like, holy shit. I'm going to be Eric fucking Wahlberg. Like, that was...
Did you say that?
To myself. Yeah. I was so excited.
Wow. That's a compliment to me. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with me. Finally, after all these years,
I couldn't believe it.
Share something with me.
And I remember, sheepishly bringing it up to you the next day, because I had a 25 on my bike when those were really, really rare. You know, like, before, people didn't do that.
No, if you had a 23 on, that was it.
Yeah,
man.
People, like, oh, if you're in that, you're getting dropped.
Yeah.
But I got a 25 on, and I remember thinking, like, oh, these fuckers are just grinding, and I'm spinning. So then I saw you the next day, and I was like, oh, hey, man, good ride yesterday. And you're like, yeah, that was really nice. What gear did you have on there? You were spinning quite a bit. Wish I had that gear. And I was like, this fucking guy, he's going to try to take my head off. Oh, I got to keep it going.
Yeah, we had a 23 on.
Yeah, yeah.
21, God only knows, but...
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing the podcast, dude.
It's my pleasure, brother. Thank you.